This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Gar Alperovitz, co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative and co-chair of its Next System project. For 15 years, Gar was the Lionel R. Bauman Professor of Political Economy at the University of Maryland and is a former fellow of King's College, Cambridge University. He is author of several books, including What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution. Gar Alperovitz is here to tell us about buying out the fossil fuel industry to address climate change and to discuss how to build a better future in the Trump era. Welcome, Gar.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be with you.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Democracy Collaborative and your Next System project?
Oh, happy to. We set up an organization some time ago. It's called the Democracy Collaborative. It's actually been going about 20, 22 years, first in the university and now external to it. And the goal is to begin developing a very, very specific and concrete vision about how to transform the system. And we do two different kinds of things. One, we do specific on-the-ground projects. We work in communities like Cleveland, Ohio, and many other cities to create worker co-ops and complex citywide or neighborhood-wide structures that in one way or another democratize ownership. That's one of the central principles, that democratizing from the bottom up is a way to begin thinking about how to transform the system over time. And we could go into many, many, many projects we have around the country that we've been working on and publications in that area. And then the Next System project, it's co-chaired by a well-known environmentalist, Gus Speth, who is my co-chair, is aimed at how do we begin to think through the longer-term vision. We sometimes say if you don't like the way corporate capitalism is going and you don't like the way state socialism went, what do you want? What would be the best practical system that we could begin to think through intelligently? What is its architecture? Why would it work better than any of the existing systems? And how do we get there? And what are starting points? So we're trying to develop a very, very serious discussion of the architecture of where we want to go and what are stepping stones in the right direction. We've published almost 30 different papers. Some people believe in start with worker co-ops and build up. Some people believe to start in communities and build up. Some people have a regional vision. But these are very sophisticated, developed kind of visions to start an intelligent debate like the founding fathers did at the time of the committees of correspondence and the debate about the constitution of the country, beginning that kind of discussion. And on the other hand, looking for starting points, which we can talk about some of the bigger projects we've done in cities like, say, Cleveland or others, that point in the new direction. So it's very, very kind of visionary in one sense, but very practical visionary. And on the other hand, very practical on the ground, things that people are doing around the country now that help point in the right direction.
In a recent article in The Nation magazine, you proposed buying out the fossil fuel industry to help address climate change. Why are you suggesting this approach?
Well, I think we're running up against the time limits. People who study this very closely, as many environmentalists know, the clock is ticking. People think typically 4 or 5 years is the date at which we start getting into very high degrees of warmth and heat on the planet that begin to create very massive changes. So I can go at length into that if we like, but one of the simplest ways for me to talk about it, and most people don't quite know this one, the best estimates, and there have been 3 studies that I've found, are that global warming each year produces conditions that probably cost of the order of 500,000 lives a year. That's far more lives than we lost in World War II. That's a huge, huge loss each year. And so the pressure to get something done now is both because we're reaching a threshold where we're going to reach very, very kind of irreversible damage. And secondly, the number of lives lost every year is a reason to take action sooner rather than later.
And why buy out the fossil fuel industry?
Well, that's the interesting idea. And the notion, let me be quite clear, we're offering a specific plan which we know has to be thought through. People have to digest the way to do it, and we're not going to get it through the Trump administration. But to really be able to do something hitting the ground running when hopefully a Democratic president is elected in 4 years, we're trying to lay the groundwork for that. the basic opposition to doing what's needed to deal with climate change, both in this country and elsewhere, has come from the fossil fuel industry. They have opposed regulation. They have opposed various forms of carbon capture. They have been obstacle to very massive investment in solar and in wind and in alliance with the auto companies and changing fuel standards. Right at the heart of the alliance that is blocking what we need to do are companies like Exxon, the big companies, some of the coal companies left over. That's where the power is. So the goal is both in order to reduce emissions, but also to change the political dynamics that have prevented an all-out assault on what needs to be done. They really need to be taken out of the way.
Let's talk about the details of your proposal and how it would work. Which companies do you propose buying?
Well, we're talking about the largest polluters and the largest companies, but let's just, for the sake of this discussion, let's use something like Exxon as an example. The thing that's unique, I think, about the proposal, and this is slightly complicated, but not to bankers. Bankers understand what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it carefully for folks who are not involved in banking theory. The way we hope to do this, and we propose doing it, is not something that's going to cost the taxpayers anything. Now, how in the world could that be possible? Well, the way the banks are running now, and we've just had this all over the world, it's going on in Europe. We did $2 trillion in the United States through what's called quantitative easing. That's a technical term bankers use. But it's really quite simple. That is, the Federal Reserve Board in this country and in every country has to create new money out of nothing all the time. And when you think about it, the reason that's obvious, if there wasn't more money expanding all the time, the economy could never, never grow. And the way that's done is the Federal Reserve Board actually, with a computer, puts more money into the banks and loans it to them electronically, and they create it out of nothing. Very hard for most people to grasp, but as you talk to your banker friends or talk to any economist, that's what happens every day. But quantitative easing was done recently to put huge amounts of money into the banking system, $2 to $3 trillion, to buck up the banking system. And what we're suggesting is, and this is what's called modern monetary theory, has been developing these ideas all over the world in the last 20 years, we ought to use those techniques, very common, very conventional, being done all over the world for many other purposes, to create funding to buy out these companies. And that gives you the power to do it. Once you see that the power to do it is available, then the strategy becomes much, much more obvious than if we had to reach into our taxpayers to buy out the companies, which we don't have to do. So that's the strategy, to be prepared now and to learn these kind of, to some people, very complex ideas, beginning to teach environmentalists these ideas, beginning to pass the word around and creating a coalition so that if we get a positive Democratic presidency, we're ready to go on day one and can move the obstacles out of the way and get on with what really needs to be done to deal with the global warming.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Gar Alperovitz, co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative and co-chair of its Next System project. Our topic is buying out the fossil fuel industry to address climate change and how to build a better future in the Trump era. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. How would the purchase actually take place?
In the end, you actually would buy the stock of the companies. And indeed, one of the things that would make it a little simpler and easier, the government could announce that we're going to buy 51% of the stock, not all of the stock. And what that would mean is that people, instead of waiting for higher prices, there'd probably be a rush to the exit to get in while the getting's good. So there are techniques to do that. It's a simple way of proceeding. You buy the stock as you like, and the government would then be in position to shut down the companies as fast as possible, but most important, get them out of the way politically so we can get on with all the other things that need to be done to deal with climate change.
How much would purchase of the fossil fuel industry likely cost?
The number, if you bought it all rather than 51%, is about $1.15 trillion, a lot of money. But it's a lot less if you spread it out over 7 years than the wars we've been having in Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan, the wars, and particularly Afghanistan. So I think it's a lot of money, but spread out over time, it's a lot less than what we've been spending on these massive wars. And again, we're not doing it through the taxpayers who paid for the wars, but in this case, using the techniques of the Federal Reserve Board that are available to us.
To what extent is inflation a concern if more money is pumped into the economy, going back to the quantitative easing?
That's a very good question. As most economists know, if factories are running at 75 or 85% capacity, and if the building industry is building half as many houses as they have the capacity to build, and if there's unemployed labor all over the country, as there is, you can put more money into the economy, as we're talking about, and what will happen is people will be hired, the houses will be built, the factories will run at higher rates of production, and there is no inflation problem because there's excess capacity. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, we are in such a situation now, and putting that kind of funding into the economy is not likely to create inflation. There's plenty of room in the economy to absorb the kind of money we're talking about.
What are the precedents for the federal government taking similar actions in moments of crisis?
So that's a very interesting question, because quantitative easing, or what's called modern monetary theory, which is behind all of the things we're talking about now, that's a technique without the name that's been used again and again over time. Interestingly enough, Abraham Lincoln used it to build the Transcontinental Railroad. He used similar techniques. Roosevelt had through the Reconstruction Finance Corporation during the Depression to get the economy going, used very similar techniques. So we do this, and we know how to do this during times of war or times of massive construction. Canada has done it. The Bank of Japan is doing it now. All the European banks are all doing it. It's not very unusual, but it's unusual for people to think about it. Henry Ford once said, if people really understood how the banking system works, there'd be a revolution tomorrow. The idea that the banks actually create money out of nothing seems very strange. But if you think about it for 5 minutes, if we didn't create new money, the economy could never develop. And this is simply how it's done. It's currently called quantitative easing when it was done to buy bank bonds recently.
Would you speak about what is called the carbon bubble, the potential financial implications, and how the fossil fuel buyout could be used to address it?
You know, there's a big piece of this that people don't quite realize that I might lay out for you if we have the time. One of the things that's going on in the financial community, and the Securities and Exchange Commission has been looking at the carbon bubble rather intensely, because if you begin to assess the coming years and believe that at some point in various countries there are going to be real restrictions, then the bubble is going to pop. And what does that mean? It means that big companies, take Exxon, who have huge reserves in the ground. One estimate of reserves in general is in the $26 trillion range of the big companies. The value of those reserves is going to go down if we start getting serious about climate change, quite apart from what we're talking about in this conversation. If regulations grow and if measures to do conservation and solar and wind, et cetera, grow no matter what, some of that value, some of those oil reserves are going to stay in the ground. And that means the stock value of the companies today is actually overvalued. The Securities Exchange Commission has been on Exxon's case right now about this, and so have big investors like the pension funds at the universities and hospitals around the country, that they have not been reporting the value of their companies and therefore the value of their stock appropriately, according to the Securities and Exchange Commission. So there's a potential of, if we don't do this right, that there'll be an explosion in price and values of stock and the bubble will burst. So what we're talking about is getting at that explicitly in the buyout and a phased and planned reduction in the production and also financing it in a way that makes financial sense, both to the investors as well as to the companies, as well as getting the carbon out of the way by buying out the companies.
How receptive is the country likely to be to buying the fossil fuel industry?
You know, at this point in time, the idea that we've suggested, which is built on things that economists know about all over the world, is a new idea. And we know it's not going to be something that can be easily digested overnight, and certainly not by the Trump administration. That's why we published this article and another article about this at this time. We think there's a long educational process that needs to go on around the country. There is a big movement building up. There has been building up a progressive movement in general and a progressive movement on climate change intensely. There was a huge, huge march here in Washington. What we're hoping to do is build this up, and hopefully there'll be a progressive candidate running and president elected in 4 years, And the word will have developed throughout the environmental community, and people will learn and think about it. All the questions that we've been discussing now need to be hashed out. Refined positions need to be developed, fine-tuned, et cetera. So we want to get ahead of the game, and hopefully that's what we're trying to do by getting the word out. And several environmentalists have been taking interest in what we're doing and trying to develop further arguments and clarifications that can be used over the next 4 years.
How do you think the fossil fuel industry will respond?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because at one level, I'm sure they will think this is horrible and a horrific idea, and the banking community as well. My goodness, you're stepping on everybody's toes. But at another level, and this is one of the really intriguing question marks out there, many of them know very well that they may not be able to sustain their position very long, and that the value of their stock and the value of the oil and coal in the ground is going to diminish when investors begin to realize that the handwriting's on the wall. So the smart ones may very well say, this is not a bad idea. I'm sure at first they'll think this is really off the wall. But on second and third and fourth thoughts, we wouldn't be surprised if they began to say this may actually be a good exit strategy for those companies. And if that happens, then we can move much faster on climate change. And that's the real goal here, to see if we can get them out of the way so we can do what's necessary to save the planet.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Gar Alperovitz, co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative and co-chair of its Next System project. Our topic is buying out the fossil fuel industry to address climate change and how to build a better future in the Trump era. What kind of response are you getting so far to your ideas about the government buying out the fossil fuel companies?
We've actually been quite surprised. We had a meeting here at our center the other day of environmentalists from many of the major organizations, and we thought this was going to be a little bit of a jolt to them, that this would be that's too novel, too interesting, too provocative. It also requires you to know something about the banking industry that most people don't know about quantitative easing. But surprisingly, there was not the reaction. There was a lot of interest, positive interest. And the reason was, I think, people now see that we are up against not only incredible dangers with climate and global warming, but that most of the solutions that are being offered don't move fast enough. And so something that would actually break the logjam, I was quite surprised at the reaction. We've had some very leading environmentalists have contributed ideas on the internet. We've had support from a number of people. I think it takes a little thinking through because it's novel and interesting and involves banking and banking theory and modern monetary theory. But once the penny drops, as they say in London, once you see we're up against a time barrier, we've got to do something bold rather than really just kind of push along the tracks. And two, this could be done. And three, maybe the oil companies might see a way for them that would work. We've been quite positively surprised by the response to what is obviously a novel and interesting and provocative idea beyond the usual ideas.
So procedurally, do you see this as a law that would come forth from Congress?
Probably that would be necessary, but there's a question about whether the Federal Reserve Board could do this directly itself, and that's in the courts right now under another case. It hasn't been decided yet. I mean, the Federal Reserve Board definitely has the capacity to do this for the banks, and they did it to the tune of $2 trillion. They probably have the capacity to do this under what's called Article 14 of the Federal Reserve Act, which deals with urgent and emergency problems. But it hasn't been clarified by the courts yet. If not, it would have to be done with congressional authority. In either case, the politics of it has to be very bold because it'll take presidential leadership to make it happen one way or another.
So what are the best steps to bring this idea forward?
I mean, we wrote this now. We're, 4 years in advance is kind of how we think about it, with a view of trying to get folks to think about something like this and begin building knowledge and pressure and educating themselves, educating their congressmen and women, educating the environmental movement. That's the next step, to begin to digest what is kind of an odd and provocative and novel idea and get the word out. We're hoping that people can do that, and we've had some responses from some very well-known environmentalists to give us some sense that that's likely. My co-chair in the Next System Project is a man named Gus Speth, one of the leading environmentalists in the country, and he's had very positive response as well from folks in the environmental community who see this as less provocative than we thought. We were a little worried about it because we know it's an interesting and novel and really an unusual idea that hasn't been talked about before.
What are your thoughts overall on how to build a better future in the Trump era?
You know, part of what we've been doing, and this is an example, we think that we actually are facing a systemic crisis rather than a political crisis. What do I mean by that? That means that we think that the problems of advanced capitalism, just like the problems of socialism, are really coming, you know, coming to the fore, and that there's something wrong at the systemic level that we are beginning to face. I mean, American, all over the world, this is happening in France, it happened with Brexit, it's happening in England. Something is wrong with the system itself. And that means, how do we think through, and this is the Next System Project, how do we think through a different vision of what might be possible? And how do we make it practical rather than kind of, you know, wonderful utopian theories? And if you look back to the 1920s, what you'll see just below the surface is almost everything that became the big parts of the New Deal in the 1930s and 40s actually was being experimented in the state and local so-called laboratories of democracy, social security, welfare programs, agricultural programs, banking programs. All of this was going on, labor law particularly, in different states, and then was brought forward to the national level. We see a lot of that going on around the country in both the Democracy Collaborative and the Next System Project. So, for instance, there are places all over the country working on worker cooperatives. There are public banks attempted to be established, like the Bank of North Dakota, in several parts of the country. I think the most advanced are Santa Fe and Denver, and also in Philadelphia. There are people setting up public land ownership, or so-called land trusts. All these are democratized forms at the local level. There's a growing discussion of bigger banks and public banking as a possibility, which is common in most parts of the world at the national level. There are people taking over municipalizing utilities, primarily to deal with energy and climate change problems. The most advanced there is in Boulder, Colorado. If you went to the website of the community-wealth, one of our websites, you'll find all kinds of things that the press doesn't cover, partly because the local press really is in such dire needs that it doesn't have much capacity to cover it. You have to go to the web and find it. And this particular website, community-wealth, brings together things from other websites. But we see something bubbling up at the institutional level that begins to look like a cooperative or decentralized vision. I call it a pluralist commonwealth vision. Lots of forms of democratic ownership or commonwealth, starting at the grassroots level, ordinary co-op, for instance, but building up ultimately to regional ownership, state banks like the Bank of North Dakota, and when we get to the national level, probably some national banks as well and some national ownership. But going always to the local level whenever possible, or the state or regional level. We see that process developing out of pain, out of people being really up against it and beginning to say it's time to build something new. On the other hand, there's the, quote, resistance, unquote. A whole new politics is building up simultaneously with these experiments, like the experiments of the 1920s and the sort of prehistory of the laboratories of democracy all over the country. So we see both new institutional experimentation, and we spend a lot of energy in the Democracy Collaborative and the Next System Project in keeping on top of this, and new ideas about what to do in the banking system and new proposals being developed. This is a very, very painful period, but it's very fertile. The New Economics Coalition brought together 1,000 people who are experts doing this last year at a big conference that was held in Buffalo. There's other groups that have been doing similar things, and just below the surface, because the press hasn't caught up with it yet, there's a lot going on that, in my view, and sort of speaking as a historian, what we're doing is seeing a whole different range of things building up and tying in with the politics of what Bernie Sanders did, which is also big, the Democratic Socialist organizations, or young people, which is Bernie's a Democratic Socialist, they're popping up all over. Meetings of different resistance groups all over the country as well. So we see that mix as a very, very fertile moment in development, even though at the national level we're facing Mr. Trump and his allies. This is a period of great creativity and hopefully laying the groundwork for something very, very positive beyond.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
You can find all of this at the websites, the Next System Project or Democracy Collaborative. But the real message is, you know, roll up your sleeves and kind of what can you do locally to begin moving some of these balls down the track? There are people gathering in different ways. Learn about this. Learn what's happening. Begin to think through some unusual, provocative ideas. Imagine that we're going into a new phase of history, just as we did after the 1920s. And actually always starting locally. What can we do locally to build some power and new institutional direction? I think that's catching on around the country. And I think a movement is building. And the part of it that is most exciting is that we're adding very concrete, specific things like public banks, like land trust, land ownership, like neighborhood ownership, like cooperatives, worker cooperatives, like municipalization. All of these are preliminary to some of the bigger national things as well. So I guess the message I'd leave is come roll up your sleeves because a lot of folks are doing it.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Gar.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You were just listening to Gar Alperovitz, co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative and co-chair of its Next System Project. For more information, check on the web at democracycollaborative.org and thenextsystemproject.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.